Y'all ready for some post-draft content? Because that's what you're getting both nights this week. We're back here inside the Collective. It is the 28th of April here in 2026. Thanks to our partners at Prize Picks and Lucy for continuing to support the growth of this channel. And fellas, we are coming up on 8,000 subscriptions. We'll continue to sound like a broken record when we ask, if you could, if you're not already, to subscribe to the Baltimore Collective for weekly draft-related content this week and Ravens content year-round. I'm Bobby Trossett, as always, joined alongside my co-hosts, Jeff Zarebek of The Athletic, Cole Jackson of Road Graders. Lots to get into, guys. We of course, previewed for an hour on Thursday, opening night of the draft, and then we all had various commitments. And so now we're here, and there's been a lot of draft content to consume over the last few days, but we're going to do our best to break this thing into parts. So 1.0 and 2.0 this week. In that order, it'll be 1.0 tonight. We'll get through as many prospects as possible in 60 minutes and save the rest, the back half of those 11 players. That's the draft class, 11 players for Thursday night. What we liked, disliked, what's up next in terms of business, and of course, what Jeff has learned over the last couple of days, and Cole's obviously been grinding the film on Road Graders. We'll also get to your super chats that have already started to come in. But Jeff, your thoughts from 1,000 feet up on this year's draft class, which of course was Jesse Minter's first. Seems like he had his hands all over this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We called it, like all three of us, when we picked on Thursday afternoon, we picked the three guys it came down to, correct, Bobby? Didn't you pick Sadiq?
I picked Bane.
When you picked Bane, and it came down to those three guys. I think it was really down to Bane and Venga, Ioane, and they went with Ioane, and I love the pick. I think you could make a case for Bane. I would have been more than satisfied with that pick. But I think when you look at the deficiencies and look where the Ravens already have a good number of assets in terms of, you know, what they paid Hendrickson, Mike Green's a second round draft pick, Isaac's a third rounder, you know, and just what they've spent there. I have no issue with them using their first round pick to fortify their offensive line. I think Ioane is one of the safest players in the draft, but I also think he's got legit Pro Bowl ceiling. So I don't think it's just a matter of him having a high floor. I think he has a high ceiling too. So I really like that pick. Would have been okay with Bane too. Overall, I like the draft class. I didn't love it. And I think what's stopping me from, you know, I don't grade. I didn't really grade. We didn't have to do a letter grade. But what's stopping me from saying they aced it? Well, one, you don't know what this is going to be. But just ahead of time is, you know, the not drafting a center. I mean, that's, I understand why they didn't do it. But you almost, that was a must coming out of this draft. They didn't get it done. I don't like not drafting interior defensive linemen until later. I think people continue to operate that follow the team like it's a foregone conclusion that Matt Ibeke plays. And, you know, maybe it's likely at this point. I wouldn't use those words, but maybe it is. But still, that's a huge risk where you just don't know when he's going to be back, how long he's going to stay in, when he's going to get doctor's clearance, if he gets doctor's clearance from Ravens team doctors. So I think they need to be active in both those areas. I think they need to trade for a center. And I also think they need to sign one of these veteran free agent tier defensive linemen. But yeah, I thought they did a relatively good job. I like certain things, how they focused, kind of added a little more toughness and size at a lot of different positions. They added depth. I'm glad they didn't just forget about cornerback and they made the pick. And I'm sure as hell glad they didn't trade back a couple spots for 2 fourth-round picks. You know, so whoever, you know, whatever had happened there, I think it probably worked out for the best for them.
Almost surprising that piece of information got released, because I'm sure that just incensed fans. You know, I think you nailed it pretty well. I did go back to my pre-draft video where I kind of ranked the needs. And Jeff, I remember you and I kind of talked about this. And one of my takeaways is like center was the biggest need on the team in my
opinion. Yeah.
And I made it clear when I did that, that doesn't mean you need to take that position first. It doesn't mean you need to take that position second. Obviously, positional value, strength of the draft class, all that stuff matters when you're making picks. But I do think it's a disappointment to come out of the draft without a center. I'm sure we'll talk about Nick Dawkins later. That's a pretty damn good consolation prize in terms of landing a UDFA. But I do appreciate that they kind of were pretty blunt about why that happened, which I do appreciate. They basically said the two guys that we wanted, they kind of framed it as the two guys we thought could be day one starters went on in the second round. And that was very clearly Jake Slaughter and Logan Jones. They were my number one and number two ranked centers. And so, I mean, it makes sense. I obviously disagree with the assessment. I definitely, when that trade up came in, I thought it was 100% Sam Heck. I thought it was a foregone conclusion. And then it was Matt Hibner, who, quite frankly, I didn't even know who he was. No disrespect to him. I've been able to jump into some film now. But, the other takeaway for me, and something that I think needs to be looked at a little bit more, is one, they focused more on production this year than traits. And that has been something that I think negatively impacted them over the last few drafts. It was always traits, traits, traits. You go back to even like Odafe Owe, didn't have a sack in his last year of college. And, you watch the film and you do see traits and you get excited about it. But then it doesn't translate right away anyway. So I do like that they got some high production guys. You know, their first four picks are guys that produced in college. Vanga was the most productive interior pass protector in college football. Zion Young was the third ranked edge rusher in this draft in terms of pressures. Only Bain and Bailey were ahead of him. Jacoby Lane and Surratt they lived in the end zone in college. Like Surratt had 44 touchdowns in 4 years. So they went with guys with production. The other thing that they did, obviously there's a lot of green RAS scores, but not all freak athletes. A lot of guys that are bigger, more physical, and I think more tone setter style guys. So someone like Vanga, for example, isn't going to wow you with his 40 time or his three cone, but he's a tone setter. Zion Young, the same thing, a 7.43 RAS, if I remember correctly. But you put on the tape, he's violent, he's physical. A lot of those things that I think have come back to bite them in the playoffs. And I mean, I just went through this because I watched the Ottawa Senators get absolutely bullied in the playoffs by a more physical Carolina Hurricanes team. In the playoffs, in any sport, things get more physical. And I think the Ravens needed to address that. And I think they did with the guys they got. Even the two wide receivers they brought in, more physical guys than the more finesse targets they've had lately. So overall, definitely, they left a little meat on the bone. In my opinion, there's a few picks I would have done differently, but I really like the approach that they took. I think it really showed certain things like developing an identity at wide receiver. They seemed to target a very specific type of wide receiver. So I respect that approach. And, overall, I think the going with more physical guys is going to benefit them in the postseason.
Yeah, guys, real quick, Bobby, the center thing, it's not even really that I find fault with what they did. I think this, we don't need to relive this, but the issue was how they handled the Linderbaum situation, and not even his free agency. When he was a free agent, he was gone. He wasn't coming back. As Jerry Sandusky likes to say, the hay was in the barn. It was over. And them not taking care of it earlier, a year earlier, like they do with Hamilton already. But again, we don't need to relive that. I don't even really find fault with their drafting strategy. Like, they have models and predictive models, and they do a lot of studies of mock drafts. They make a lot of calls to agents and prospects, and they usually have a really good feel for where guys are going to go in this draft. And their models let them down on the center thing, because their model told them there was a very good chance, well better than 50%, well better, that those two guys, Logan Jones, the center from Iowa, and Jake Slaughter, the center from Florida, were going to be there when they made that pick at 80, or at least were going to be close enough where they would only have to move a couple spots to make sure they got them. But where those guys went blew them out of the water. I mean,
Logan Jones shocked everyone. Let's be real, right?
And you weren't going to pick Logan Jones What was their second round pick at? Was that
45? And I think
you're not picking Logan Jones at 57? 45. Yeah.
You're and then not I think picking. Slaughter went at 60.
Yeah. So you're not picking those guys there. You're just not. And then, and, you know, I think there's a, well, they should have traded up and used some of those picks. Well, maybe if they knew those guys were going to go early, they may have done that, but you just don't know. I think everybody was shocked, but they usually get good, pretty good intel on where guys are going to go. And I think they were really surprised at where those guys went, and them not picking a center later was not because they were outfoxed or outmaneuvered to get guys. They just didn't really like any of the remaining ones, and they're not going to pick a guy who, they don't like, or their assistant coach, their offensive line coach doesn't like. So they sort of stood pat, but it puts an awful lot of pressure on, it puts an awful lot of pressure on them going forward. But I think I saw something that looking at the teams with the greatest variance of where guys were picked to where they picked them, and Bears were near the top of the list. And that Logan Jones pick, I think, I mean, this is a Bears team that traded for a center this offseason.
Yeah.
You know, they traded for Garrett Bradbury.
Yeah.
So I think everybody was really surprised that both those guys went in the second round. I guess you could say they should have once Logan Jones came off the board, you could say they should have traded up to make sure they got Slaughter. But I think he went six picks later. And I think at the time, as I was listening to the draft, both Lewis Riddick and I forgot who he's with. Maybe it was Mel Kiper, said they thought it was a reach to take Jake Slaughter where they did. So maybe the Chargers overreacted because they only like two centers too. So they wanted to get one of them. But just unfortunate they didn't get the center they needed. But I think they're going to make a trade there. I don't know who is it going to be, but I imagine those conversations are being had as we speak.
As we go prospect for prospect here in the first half of the class from this past weekend, I got two things for you guys, and let's cook through these as efficiently as possible. The first one's for Jeff as it relates to Vanga. If you're a betting man, is he starting left or right guard several months from now? And for Cole, what have you seen show up on tape from Zion Young in the run game? We know what he's done as a pass rusher. What might he do rotationally for Jesse Minter right out of the gate? Jeff, floor's yours first.
I think he's going to be a right guard only because John Simpson has been a left guard for a long time in the NFL, and he's got a number of years of that. And Ioane is not without experience at right guard. Like, he played some snaps there in college. It's not an entirely new thing. I imagine working out for teams, they asked him to take some reps at right guard and in the various workouts he had. So he's going to be in town Thursday. He'll be on the field for the start of this rookie mini camp. And there's plenty of time to get him ready to play right guard, I think. Whereas, John Simpson's been in the NFL a long time playing on the left side. So we'll see. I think it is an issue. It's not something I'm saying is overrated and a waste of breath. Like, yeah, you talk to guys, offensive linemen, about switching sides, and it is adjustment. But I was like, you're not making an adjustment in week two and asking him to be ready in week three. He's got months and many, many workouts to start getting a hang of this. And my guess is it probably starts this weekend where, they give him a shot there and see what he can do.
I remember an old offensive line coach that I had when we were talking about switching sides. He said, what hand do you wipe with? And he said, go wipe with the opposite hand. That being said, I just to add kind of bookend that, I think the biggest thing for people to take away is you hear a lot of this nuance around the tackle position when you're switching sides. You know, the big one recently was obviously, well, not recently, I guess it's been a while now, but when Penei Sewell moved over to right tackle when he was drafted by Detroit, switching at the tackle spot is a lot different just because of how deep your kick step is. When you play guard, your footwork, as you move more inside, it just gets a little bit more square. So switching that dominant lean foot or post step is a lot less disruptive. So switching the guard spots, you saw Emory Jones last year play left guard and right guard in the same game. I think it's a little easier to move the guard spots than it is the tackle spots. if he plays left guard, right, I really don't think it matters. It really matters where he starts his career. If they put Vanget in there at right guard to kind of kick things off, no one's going to notice it by week. I highly doubt it. As for Zion Young and the question I was asked, the nice thing about Zion Young is high floor player, very good against the run, very physical. He's like 6'5" long arms, uses his physicality extremely well. And I think that's the biggest thing that stands out about him. He's not going to wow you athletically, but he's big, he's long, and he's strong. There's several reps in the Alabama game, if you want one specific, of him bodying Caden Proctor in the run game. And the big thing about Caden Proctor is, you know, many people didn't see him as a tackle at the next level, but he was supposed to be one of the most powerful drive-blocking offensive linemen in this draft. And Zion would long arm him in the run game and press with no issues. And that's the type of physicality you're going to get from him. He's got vicious hands. One thing I did see in his run game that I broke down in his film video this morning, because of the lack, and this is me making a little bit of an assumption, I think because of some of the lack of the juice in his pass rush game, just from in terms of his ability to bend the edge, I think he works himself too far upfield off the snap playing the pass. And I think he sometimes makes it really easy to seal him out of plays. And that stood out a few times. So I threw some of those clips in so you can see exactly what I mean. I had that concern with Cassius Howell too, when I was breaking down his tape. So, you know, overall, I think that's the nice thing. I also think you look around, Trey Hendrickson has been criticized a lot for his run defense. Well, when he comes to Baltimore now, you have Tavius Robinson, who's one of the better edge setters in the league. You got Zion Young, really puts Mike Green and Trey Hendrickson in a role where if you don't want them to play against the run, if you really want to save that explosiveness and that juice, you can now mix and match skill sets. And the Ravens suddenly pretty damn deep at edge rusher where you have four guys that you feel pretty damn good with. And the added benefit of Zion Young, and I would throw Tavius into this as well, both can kind of slide into the five, slide into the four eye technique. Several reps were in my video this morning of him playing the inside. So very happy about that as well.
Well, and Jeff, to go along with that, perhaps he made Terrell Suggs a proud fatherly figure, if you will, with that first media press conference that you took part in.
Yeah, he's a character, man. He got on Charles Walker a little bit for not having his earphones in, and he was tweaking us pretty good. He definitely has some personality, and you know, the way it works is once they draft these guys, they put them on conference calls or Zoom calls. Most of them, you know, when they're doing surefire drafting on day three, there's not as much time for it. But it was a really impressive group of prospects that they got. I mean, Ioane doesn't say a whole lot, but man, he comes out with some one-liners, like, and doesn't even break character, doesn't smile as he says them. You know, he definitely has that edge to him, and Zion Young has that as well. I didn't, you know, the Ravens had Zion Young as a top 25 player in this draft. I think somewhere in the low 20s.
Did he say, let's get it on a Zoom call? I got to know.
I don't remember if he said that. He got on us for not having enough energy, though. they had him as a top 25 player in this draft. And, you know, I don't know what kind of grade they had on him because, you know, teams did not have anywhere close to 32 first round grades. But regardless, as they stacked the board, he was in their top 25. So when you're sitting there at 45 and you get that guy, and it's a position of need and it matches their personality, given how he plays and, you know, what they need and all that, I think you have to feel pretty good. I was sort of tweaking Cole a little and pulling for the Clemson cornerback just because I love that kid. But, you know, this one made a lot of sense. To get these two guys who are kind of tone setters with your first two picks, that'll be huge. And, you know, you want to see Zion Young's – you don't pick a guy early. You want to see his pass rush develop, and we will see that. It's not like he didn't show he could do it at Missouri. Cole brought up the pressures. So we'll see how that develops. But they certainly got a couple alphas on each side of the ball with those first two picks.
No kidding. Let's stick a pin in it real quick here and tell you guys about Prize Picks. We'll also take a look at how we did most recently last week. We're focusing on NFL futures. And when I say last week, we're obviously not going to look at that because it's NFL futures for a reason. So we'll look at that in the months ahead. But fellas, focusing on, and again, prizepicks.com, we appreciate them for the continued support. If you use code HMA, you play $5, you get $50 instantly in lineup. So let's go ahead and have a little bit of fun here. Last time, I guess we could just check, take a look and just remind everybody what we did futures wise moving forward. We took Myles Garrett, 14 sacks, meaning more. We think more than 14 sacks. We took Ashton Jeanty. This is, again, regular season totals is what we're predicting here, going north of 974.5 rushing yards. And Will Anderson, fresh off that $50 million extension annually, going more than 11 sacks. So just keep that in mind as we open things up for week two, looking at futures. Anything stick out to you fellas here? Perhaps, let's see.
Got to go more on Puka touchdowns, right? He's going to get 8.
You think rehab was a successful stint for him? Let's give it to him. Let's give him the benefit of doubt. Checked himself in, clearly needed some help on the alcohol front. What do we think about the king?
I think Vang. Let's do a Vanga pick here. Let's go more. He's going for 1,500 again, right behind Vanga.
Let's one more, Jeff. Any?
I don't have a magnifying glass, so I can't even see the damn things that are on the screen. So
you really are.
Your guess is as good as mine.
You really are something. You know that. How about Bijan more than?
Oh, yeah, like more than 1,100.
Yeah, more than 1,100 rushing yards. He loses Dwayne Ledford, but
he'll get that by week 12. Let's be honest.
There you have it. Submit the lineup, prize picks. We appreciate them. We appreciate all of you guys, 700 plus, for joining us concurrently at the moment. Let's reset things here and get to some super chats as we roll on this Tuesday evening. And in that category, Jerry DeMonaco. Jeff got us started earlier on.
Jerry's the best. Jerry DeMonaco, not much in free agent market for centers. Are there any potential trade candidates that you see or any potential camp cuts who may work? Keep up the awesome job you guys do. Cole brought up an interesting name. Cole, you want to hit this one about Ruiz?
Yeah, we kind of talked about it when we were I was scouring depth charts the other day, and I mean, one name that's always connected to trade buzz is Cesar Ruiz out of New Orleans. He plays right guard with Eric McCoy at center. It just kind of comes down to, are they going to trade, you know, do they feel good enough about Jeremiah Wright to trade their, you know, their starting right guard? They just added David Andrews to try and solidify that interior, so that becomes a question mark there. The other guy that stood out to me is where Tyler Linderbaum went. And it would ironically involve a Raiders-Ravens trade, which would be funny. But Jackson Powers-Johnson, drafted out of Oregon 2 years ago, I always thought was a center at the next level. And, you know, obviously with the addition of Tyler Linderbaum, would, you know, maybe they don't see him as a right guard. And they did draft Trey Zun. They added Spencer Burford. So, you know, they got a little bit of depth there that they might consider. But big question is, would the Raiders do business with the Ravens? It really depends. I think it's an interesting thing to think about. But the reality is, like, it's kind of like left tackle. There's just not enough starting centers to go around as is. So it's hard to find that surplus. So you got to look at, you know, who is drafted. And a great example is, like, the Chargers. The Chargers are in a really weird spot because they added Tyler Biadasz and then drafted Jake Slaughter high. So do they see one of them as a, like, I like, obviously they're not going to trade a guy they just added, but, like, what do they do? They're playing one of them at guard. So
Colts, it's the same thing with the Bears. You traded for Garrett Bradbury. Is it, you know, like, yeah, there's nothing that says Logan Jones has to start, but that's awful early to pick a guy if you don't plan to play him. And I understand how important offensive line depth is. So it's really hard to find. I did the same thing when on the Our Lads, depth charts and searched all these teams, like who could be out there. Like, man, I think Cole and I are in agreement. You know, people bring up Graham Glasgow and Ethan Postage of the Browns. And I don't know that you feel any better about those guys than you do about your three in-house options. I mean, Pinter has played okay when he's played. I think they were, you know, they'd be comfortable maybe in the short term. I don't think you go into the season, though, and that's your plan A. No. You know, if Pinter is a reserve, I think you're good with that. They have to find a guy, and I wish I knew who that guy was going to be. You know, I've put in some calls around, and everyone's saying the same thing. I don't know who's trading the starting caliber center, but, you know, they'll also evaluate guys. Maybe there's a backup guard on a team that they think can play center, and they'll bring in just another guy that they feel a little better about that can compete. But it's, I don't see anybody cutting a starting, so you never know, but I don't see anyone cutting, per Jerry's question, I don't see anyone cutting a starting center at this stage of the game.
Easily far away, far and away, the biggest question in the aftermath of the draft.
And guys, we said this too, guys, like, that's what we're like. I said on the show, like, be careful what you wish for with Tyler Linderbaum, because that is going to, and this isn't I told you so, because I think that shit gets childish, but I said,
it's a little childish.
it's hard to find really good centers unless you want to invest a good bit of money to them free agency, or you draft them on day two of the draft. And that was the plan, to get their guy in day two, but they thought they could do it in round three, and they were proven incorrect.
Work Boots 12 says, can Harbaugh take EDC to New York? Bane and Venga fell in his lap, and he wanted to trade out for an extra fourth round pick. It would have been more than that. I'm sure his plan at center will be great. So Work Boots 12 feeling a little down, perhaps, yeah, coming out of the draft.
Yeah, you know, I think this is Cole and I were talking about this today, and I guess this is a popular reaction. Now, we don't know for sure how far he was willing to go back, but the price of getting back a fourth and another future fourth, reportedly, that's not going back very far. So that tells me it was either two or three spots. And I think the goal, if they move back, would still be able to get one of the three guys that they liked, Reuben Bain, Ioana, and the tight end from Oregon, Sadiq. Now, I know people would be much more happy with Bain and Ioana than Sadiq, so I get it. But I don't think they were going back very far. I think we're talking about two, maybe three spots, where they felt like they were still guaranteed to get a guy. But I get it. Two really good players fell in your lap. There's no way I would be willing to move off that for a fourth round pick in back-to-back years. That wouldn't be enough. It would need to be a day two pick.
Jeff, another one for you from Kayla Nicole.
Jeff, do us all a favor. Make sure the Ravens do not media train Zion Young. We have found the NFL equivalent of Ant Edwards when it comes to authentic, out-of-pocket, and talking comedy, and we love it.
Yes. Let's get it.
It was
Let's get it.
The hours in the draft room get pretty long, especially on day three. But day two, it's a little late there. And he livened up the room, that's for sure, when we had the Zoom call with him.
Kayla, thank you. Cole, parkour for you.
Jay-Z Dawkins, sneaky on starting center week one. This is going to be the big guy that everybody focuses on. It's Nick Dawkins. He's, in a lot of ways, the next Corey Bullock, where, he's a UDFA that people are going to be excited about. And I think the nice thing about Nick Dawkins is, because he played literally right beside Venga Ioane, we've gotten to watch him, if you've watched the Penn State film. And, you know, he's pretty effective. And I think the big thing about the center position is, between Corey Bullock and Nick Dawkins, that's kind of the two that I think will have the best shot. If Nick Dawkins can kind of come in and make a mark, I think you're going to feel good enough about what they can do in pass protection, where if you're willing to give them a little bit of extra help now that you've upgraded both guard spots, I think it'll go a long way. And then, you know, factor in that we'll find out here very shortly, but I won't be surprised if we start hearing reports of Emory Jones taking snaps at center. And I mean, that's not new. We talked about this last week. The Ravens usually cross train their guards at center. You know, they give them a shot, because the more you can do, the better, especially when you're a bench player. But I would imagine the Ravens approach will be John Simpson at left guard, Ioane at right guard. And so Emory Jones, if he wants to get on the field, will take those center snaps if he gets the opportunity in camp. And whether he can make that jump, we'll see. But you have about six guys competing for center right now, which I guess was always the approach, was to get competition in there. I disagreed on the level of competition. I wanted a higher investment, but you know, you can't draft a guy just to draft a guy. You gotta believe in him, and the Ravens didn't. So,
man, guys, this is a team that will start with Super Bowl aspirations, and the priority in the offseason was to improve the offensive line, that and the pass rush. Those were their two big things. And we're talking about starting an undrafted free agent from a very bad draft as the week one center. Man, nothing against Dawkins, but I think we should probably pump the brakes on that talk. That would be very concerning if that's how this ends up.
It is well documented. A lot of people have been responding to observations like that, that the Seahawks did just rip off a Super Bowl run with a UDFA, but not all scenarios transfer over, right? Not all, everything is created equal in that standpoint. But
and what Sekura started as a at not week one, but he started at some point as a UDFA as a rookie, right?
And McCary, I don't know if he was a rookie, but
yeah,
but was that after a couple of years. Like Skura had played right guard that year before, you know, and that's the Corey Bullock situation, and that's why. Yeah. You know, Corey Bullock, he's played good. Anytime he's worn a Ravens uniform, he's performed. It just hasn't been against top competition. So, yeah. I mean, that kid works his ass off, too. He has checks a lot of the boxes that we need. So, I mean, Corey Bullock, go earn it, kid. Like, he's got that opportunity in front of him.
And maybe he ends up becoming a fan favorite for the job when it's all said and done, because after his first few years at North Carolina Central, he ended up transferring to College Park and then he went undrafted, obviously, as we've alluded to. Dreams is hyping you up, Cole, because you guys got your guy. Vanga.
Well, I don't even know if we can say our guy. That's been Dreams' guy since 3 months, 4 months.
Since he came out the womb. Yes. Since he came out the womb. Dre Dog is here, Jeff.
Listen, never be so focused on what you're looking for that you overlook the thing you actually find. Ravens found talented guys. Trust the process.
Man, we need to get Dre on the pod.
I need to get the confetti from the jersey reveal to wave around a little bit.
Did you bring Poe home?
I didn't bring Poe home. No, the Poe Panda is.
That was going to be the collective mascot.
Because that would have been stealing. Because technically, Cole, it was not my property. It was in the Ravens' the room. But yeah, no, like guys, we had a cool event today. It was kind of an off the record thing, but. Andrew Raphael, the director of college scouting, and Joey Cleary, the assistant director of college scouting, watched film with us of the draft picks. All 10 of the 11 we saw. They did not do the punter film because we ran short on time. Somewhere Ryan Mink is crying in his beer because we didn't get to watch punter film. But that's beside the point. And, you know, it was interesting to see these guys. You know, obviously it was off the record, so I really can't say a ton about what they were saying and stuff. But just seeing tape of all these guys, I'm not saying they didn't have a good draft class. I like the draft class. I also think draft grades are absurd because nobody really knows how these guys are going to develop. And often drafts that are panned wind up working out okay. So we'll see. But on paper, I liked a lot about it. It just, there were a few missing pieces for me.
Yeah. Raven, Bama.
Now go team.
Cole, why don't you take this one, Cole? Because Jeff just mumbled through Dre Dogs, and I'm sure he's feeling some type of way about the $5 investment. So Raven, Bama, always Cole for you.
Ravens slow walked getting a veteran center signed after Lindy walked. There were a few viable ones available. I think that was the error. I don't really remember who was available, but yeah, I mean, like, there's no denying it. Like, I know we're going to probably talk this to death. Connor McGovern and Tyler Biotish were probably the only two, you know, I don't know if Cade Mays really puts you in that much better of a position right now. Like, are we fired up about Cade Mays or Luke Fortner as your starting center? I don't think so. I think we're still kind of feeling like, oh, maybe we should have drafted a guy to come in and compete with them and push them. So it's center's a tough spot. It really is. But I mean, there's no doubt about it. They ideally get a guy to compete out of the draft, and they did.
Dre Dog is just confirming. Jeff, why don't you try it again, huh?
Listen, You want me to dramatize this?
What? No, but this was like words of wisdom.
Oh, okay.
Read it from a positive perspective. I read it.
Never be so. What did Zion Young say again? What are those words?
Let's get it, boys.
Listen, never be so focused on what you're looking for that you overlook the thing you actually find. Ravens found talented guys. Trust the process.
So Jay-Z, come on. Don't overlook that they didn't get a center. Remember that they found Elijah Surratt and Matthew Hibner. Jeff Mumble.
We let him get away with that. He didn't even pay us a dollar to insult him.
Too good.
Damn it.
Jeremy, a step ahead of the game here after what Cole just steered us in direction wise. He says, is this crazy? Could they put Emery at center? Perhaps not crazy. And that brings us to Eritrean SCCR 87 for Jeff. It's for you, Jeff.
Do I have to answer it in my profound voice, or can I just ask it normally?
Can we at least make sure they feel like they have an ROI? How about that?
Jeff, why do most draft pick free agents always say visiting the Ravens feel like home? What's going on in the castle? Also, why does Jameson Hensley always get to ask the first question? Love the show. Well, I think with the first part, why do most people, I mean, look, first of all, the place is unbelievable. Bobby could tell you that they call it the castle for a reason. So I think it's a really comfortable spot. I think they really emphasize culture and family, and it's not always all football all the time when you're around the coaches. I really think they do a good job of, you know, sending these guys a message that they care, and people are really comfortable in that environment. So, and just to build off this, I was surprised how many guys we talked to who were in the building, right? I mean, I don't think Surratt was, but most of the other guys they brought in, usually they're more selective about their visits and don't bring in certain guys that they want to kind of keep teams off the scent. But they got a lot to sell there with how the building is set up, the facility, the kind of people and culture they have. I mean, when you have Ozzie Newsome in there, I think that hits home. So they do a really nice job. Look, you know, why the whole anti-Harbaugh stuff, like the whole narrative that he didn't like alpha males, why it always bothered me, beyond it being just complete trash and untrue, is the fact that veterans like playing in Baltimore. Like it's a destination place for a lot of veterans. And I think in the coming days, they're going to sign another veteran or two, and we're going to hear the same thing from him. I mean, I think people feel like it's one of the destination teams. They take care of their players. You know, they're in contention most years. They have some stars. They like how the organization is run. So I think that really is not just rookies who come in the building. I think it's people who have been here. I mean, look at Mark Ingram, who was here for, 2 years? And now he's basically become almost like a mascot for the Ravens with how much he builds them up. That says a lot. I mean, they cut that guy, if I'm not mistaken, right? I mean, they cut Mark Ingram, I believe, after 2 years. So as for the other part of the question, I think it was Jameson Hensley. Bobby has a quick trigger finger with his removing the pick. I mean, you're talking about me saying make sure these people get an ROI, and you're removing the question. Jameson Hensley doesn't always get to ask the first question, but he's the veteran of the beat. So oftentimes he does, but there's really no set first question. I think a lot of times as the veteran, he kind of steps up first and asks it, but you know, no hard and fast rule that anybody has to ask the first question.
Appreciate that. Stavito says, hashtag in Ledford, we trust, referring to the new O-line coach and run game coordinator, Dwayne Ledford. And Cole, that brings us to Wes Hall.
I struggle with this draft because in my bias, I'm disappointed we didn't get guys I really wanted. But without the bias, I like most of the picks. The grade really depends on what they do the next couple of months. I think Jeff's referred to that a few times. You know, it really comes down to, I know people want multiple veteran additions. I think if you sign one of DJ Reader or Calais Campbell, I think you feel pretty good about your roster on paper. I think you've checked most of your boxes. Again, I just don't really believe in the centers out there. I don't think Glasgow or Pocket, I'm pretty sure he's coming off a really bad injury.
Yes.
Yeah, so they don't really, again, I don't feel much better about their additions. I think the nice thing about Calais is you get a different type of, you know, body. You get a five tech, a four tech, that type of thing, versus DJ Reader just being another nose tackle, and now you have four on your roster. So, you know, they might do it. They did it last year. They rolled with three nose tackles on game day, and they made it work. But I think ideally you'd like someone a little different. I think Calais would really kind of round out the roster, and as a consolation prize for landing someone in the draft, I think it'd put you in a really good spot.
Thanks for the question, Wes. Yeah, I also want to add something to that. Like, maybe this is, I'm giving them too much credit, but I don't think the Ravens sit there and don't draft an interior defensive lineman until the seventh round. And I think Benny can play. I think he has definitely a shot about being a rotational guy for them. But I don't think they do that unless they have a beat on getting another guy. I just don't. That's not how they operate. There's always a plan A, B, C, and D. And I'd have to think they have a plan for both spots. And I mean center too. Like, I think they could at least talk themselves into somebody on day three saying, you know what, maybe this center will work. Like, we like enough about him. But I don't think they do that without having a decent idea that there's somebody else out there that we could bring in that's better than the options we're currently looking at.
Wes, appreciate it. Stavito says, who's the number two pass catching tight end behind Andrews? Stavito, what we'll do is we're going to get in depth on Hibner on Thursday night. We have two more wide receivers to get to in the next 15 minutes or so. The answer to your question is one of three options that are currently on the roster. The two rookies in Matthew Hibner and Josh Cuevas, and of course the vet that they brought in from Miami, who I think spent Smythe last year in Chicago, Durham, yeah, Smythe. So if I'm a betting man, it's the guy that they just traded up for to go into the fourth round and get out of SMU, who has familiarity with Jesse during their time in Michigan. He was on the other side of the ball, obviously, than what Jesse was coordinating. Do we all feel that Hibner is in pole position to be that guy?
Well, you know the Ravens track record. The second tight end drafted in a draft is always the better tight end. So if I'm a betting man, Josh Cuevas gets my money.
Cuevas. More on that coming up.
Real quick, guys, on that, because we don't want to cheat him. He asked a good question. I think what's interesting about what they did at tight end is there wasn't an effort to get one guy that specialized in everything, right? That's not what they did there. There's not one passing tight end. I mean, Durham Smythe is a blocking tight end, but they didn't go out and just get a blocker. They didn't go out and just get a pass receiver. I think there was clearly an effort to get two tight ends that, yes, they're going to need work in some areas. Maybe they're not an explosive pass catcher. Maybe they're not a good enough blocker yet, but they have that ability to do all those things, right? It's not just a pigeonholed role for one of those guys. So we can talk further about that on Thursday. Good suggestion, Bobby. But I think that's what makes it interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing who emerges as a more trusted target through the summer of Lamar, because we know he loves going to tight ends. And those guys will get shots throughout the preseason and training camp to kind of state their case that they should be kind of the number two target at that position.
Cole, Raven Kid's giving you some homework here. We signed UDFA D lineman Aaron Graves from Iowa. He's a 6'5", 300-pound three-tech from Iowa and was very productive. I think he makes the team. Cole, watch him. Have you?
Luckily, when you watch enough Big Ten offensive line film, you come across pretty much all the defensive linemen. One fact about Aaron Graves, because I remember looking him up, he's 6'4 and three-quarters, so he's almost 6'5". And his arm length is 30 and a quarter. And you know I don't really care about arm length, but that's an absurdly odd-looking spider chart to have that low of a wingspan for someone that tall. It was just one of those things that really stood out to me. His testing metrics were a lot lower than I expected. He's one of those guys that I think plays a lot more athletic on tape than what he showed. One game that he specifically noted is he gave Evan Bjornstad a tough time in that game against Iowa Northwestern.
Their seventh round pick, Evan Beers.
Yeah.
Yep. I did get a pronunciation for that, by the way. I went deep diving in the Northwestern side. Burnson. Their seventh round developmental. Well, developmental would indicate that he's young. He's not.
I was thinking Bernstein Bears.
He'll turn 26 in September, just so we're clear.
He was in college longer than you, Trossett.
We're pretty darn close age-wise. That's scary.
You must have a PhD by now.
Hopefully got a good NIL structure there at Northwestern. Steve Schaap says, besides Ladarius Webb Jr., what's the feel-good story going into rookie minicamp? Does anything beat that? I mean,
Diego Pavia?
I know. How did we go? How did we go 50 minutes and not mention Pavia? Man,
I think that was by choice.
I think we failed. I think we failed our listeners.
Maybe
those 3-year deals. I mean, start building the statue.
Why were they announced like that?
I don't know.
I've never seen that before.
I haven't either. I really haven't. I didn't even know how to explain. And, you know, I don't blame fans, but there was a lot of confusion of that. Like
it read super weird.
It did. Yeah. 100%. I shared that confusion. I didn't understand really. It's just interesting. I mean, you know what that, I haven't heard all the details of that, but that situation screams, the UConn kid had other options and to make sure, you know, you need quarterbacks at these camps. Like you can't. You can't run. So you need to make sure you have two quarterbacks there. So my guess is the UConn kid got a 90-man offer somewhere, and to make sure they were still going to get him, they just added him to the roster. And then you add him. What are you going to tell Pavia, who finished runner-up to Heisman voting? Like, No, you can still come as a tryout, but we're not going to sign you. So this puts them both on equal footing. I don't think it's guaranteed that they're both on the roster next week even. I think they'll both be evaluated this week. They may be. Like, look, that's best case scenario. Both of them look good. You go into camp with four quarterbacks. But we'll see where they have other roster needs and whether they want to have four quarterbacks going into training camp. But in many ways, this is sort of still a tryout. And they're sort of competing against each other to see who's going to be the third quarterback going to camp. And there's always options for veterans too. There's a bunch of veterans out there. Like you got like a Taylor Heinicke, who has obviously played under Marcus Brady and with the Chargers, and that's a familiar face. They may be more comfortable with the number three veteran. I like the idea of getting a developmental guy in there. I don't know if either of those kids are the answer, but we'll see more this weekend.
Someone's going to put Pavia in a trash can before the end of the weekend, but we'll see who it is. My money's on Evan Bjornson because that guy's an asshole. So, and again, that's a positive thing.
Yes.
It adds juice, though. It adds juice to camp. But, you know, we're only allowed to watch like 20 minutes on one of the days, 20 or 30 minutes. So.
And you need to spend all 20 figuring out who's taking snaps at center.
With your binoculars on the sideline there. Mr. Baby Ray says, I like Corey Bullock. Might surprise all of us. Hashtag flock. Add him to the list. Twat Swat says, I really want Vanga to play left guard beside Ronnie. And Tate Gibbons hits us with a super chat as well.
He had a question. He typed it after the super chat. He asked specifically about Vanga's ability to play center. What I would say to that is there's no way I'm drafting him at 14 overall and playing him anywhere other than guard. That being said, skill set wise, it's like anything. Projecting a player to center, it's without seeing them snap the football and how they react technique wise after the motion of snapping the football, it's impossible to have much of an opinion. And that's why when it comes to Emory Jones, like I can't really tell you because it's such a different approach to how they shoot their hands after you snap the football. So, I mean, it completely changes your technique. So it's hard to say too much, but I would say Vanga at center, highly doubt it. I don't think you're drafting a guard at 14 to play him anywhere else than guard.
Appreciate those super chats. And we have two more prospects to cook through here in the next 10 or 15 minutes or so, and they're both wide receivers. Let's get a quick read in, let everybody know what our concurrent number is, and we'll get to some more super chats before we wrap up. But we do want to say thanks to Lucy, and they make premium 100% tobacco-free nicotine pouches designed for adult users looking for a different pouch experience. They offer long-lasting flavor and a variety of strengths. One of the standout options is the Lucy Breakers that we wanted to highlight. These pouches include a capsule inside that releases an extra burst of flavor when snapped, and it makes them different from standard pouches. We break down the Ravens. Cole grinds through film. Jeff sits through film sessions, courtesy of the Ravens. We all know that staying focused is always important this time of year post-draft. Lucy offers options that some adult users turn to, with standard pouches going up to 12 milligrams in strength and a design made for comfort. Lucy's focused on delivering long-lasting, on-demand flavor. You can get 20% off your first order today if you buy online at lucy.co/HMA. You also have their store locator to toggle through so you can find a Lucy near you. Their products are only for adults of legal age, and every customer is age verified. This product does contain nicotine, which is an addictive chemical. Thanks to them for the continued support of our program. And thanks to all of you guys for showing up in droves tonight, north of 800 concurrents post-draft. We do have a milestone that's within reach. We're coming up on 300 subscriptions out from 8,000. So if you find yourself unsubscribed and you're one of those 800 plus concurrents at the moment, we'd love for you to change that. Ziad says, does Jay-Z know Don? He's inside building leak. What's the Don Olson, right? Cole, is that the Twitter account?
Yeah.
Jeff, do you know Don Olson?
I do not.
Thanks, Ziad. Appreciate the super chat. And on to the wide receivers we go. Day two ended with one, and then day three began with one. They double dipped, guys, at the position. And Cole, you mentioned it earlier on. How can you not start with both of these guys calling cards? And that was inside the 20s at their respective institutions. They just freaking produced.
Absolutely. And like I said, this told me a lot about how they approach the tight end. And I think Jeff did a really good job explaining that the tight ends they brought in were guys that were more move tight ends, guys that could line up as an H, as a Y, you know, even split out into the slot, line up in the backfield. And then the wide receivers they got were true outside wide receivers, though I do think Surratt could play some big slot. But I think they wanted bigger physical guys. And I say physical, but bigger guys that can get up for the ball and are ball winners. The great thing is they're not separators. And I say that that's a great thing because I think they needed a different type of skill set. Obviously, we have two guys in Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers who are usually top of, you know, the wide receiver rankings in terms of getting separation. What they struggled with were guys that could get up after it in the red zone, make tough catches. It's kind of what they tried to do with DeAndre Hopkins. I just think with all the uncertainty around the offensive line, the injury to Lamar Jackson, I don't think they got to unearth that true potential of DeAndre Hopkins, but you did see it early. You know, that catch against Buffalo, the touchdown against Cleveland. They wanted a guy that, again, DeAndre Hopkins was never known for his separation ability, but he's a ball winner. When the ball is in the air, it's going to be him that comes down with it. And they wanted to get two guys that find ways to do that, and they got it in both Surratt and Jacoby Lane.
Yeah, I think both these guys are going to get grouped together, not just because they're, you know, the same draft back-to-back, but, I mean, they're going to get grouped as kind of like big-bodied wide receivers. But I think they're different in a lot of ways. You know, I think Lane's the outside guy, kind of has the kind of a long strider a little bit in many ways. I think he can go up and make the circus catches, maybe a little more explosive. I think, as Cole said, Surratt could play a big slot. And I think Surratt's much better with the ball in his hands, with the run after catch. I think he's a little bit more of a threat, maybe a little more physical in some ways. So I think they're two good additions. I mean, you know, you could have easily just taken one of them and say, look, we attacked that. We got that guy. And I think that was the original plan. I don't think they thought that Surratt would have been available where they pick in the fourth round. I mean, he was not a guy that visited, did not seem like he was a guy they talked to a ton. But I think he's just a guy that they said he's too good to still be on the draft board at this time of the draft. And if you look at their receiver depth chart, there's plenty of room for two. You know, you ask yourself, are they too young now? When you talk about after Flowers and Rashad Bateman, it's, you know, two rookies, a guy in Devontae Walker is technically in his second year because his first year was pretty much a redshirt year with where he was in his development, and LeJonte Wester, a second year guy. So they're really young there, but those guys are exciting. I think their skill sets are pretty different beyond just the fact that they're big bodies guys who can go up and make plays. I think people are really going to like Surratt. Not that they won't like Lane, but I think Surratt's the type of guy who's been productive everywhere he's been, who teammates rave about, quarterbacks love throwing to. I think he's definitely an interesting guy to watch as part of this draft class. And you know, look, those guys are going to have to – people don't want to hear it, but you're the fourth, fifth receiver. You better learn special teams. You're not going to be playing much. Yeah. And I think when I said the skill set of the tight ends, those both those tight ends can play special teams. In fact, the SMU kid, he played a lot of special teams. He played big special team snaps at Michigan in some big games. So that's part of the versatility that they're looking for, guys who can contribute in every area. They're going to have a lot of young players dressed. Some of these kids are going to need to learn to play special teams. So we'll see with how that goes. But just the skill sets of those two guys are pretty exciting because, let's face it, the Ravens have lacked that piece. Eric DaCosta has been very clear in admitting that we've lacked that piece, the size with the receiver and, you know, the ability to win jump balls and make contested catches.
One thing you said, Jeff, I think is really important is they will be grouped together. And if you look at them side by side, you put their numbers side by side, they look like similar receivers. I do think Surratt is a little bit more of a physical, old school possession receiver. And I know people disagree with me. And the great thing about doing film on YouTube is I have to show my work, and I'll be doing that with the Jacoby Lane video. The reality is with Jacoby Lane, and people replied to my tweet about this with his reds, there's no doubt about it. He's a different type of receiver in the red zone where he can get up and get the ball. But the way he wins downfield when it's between the 20s is actually with more of a finesse route running style. He was number one in all of college football last year in defensive pass interference drawn. He had three drawn in the Oregon game and three drawn in the Notre Dame game. Interestingly enough, guess who coaches those Notre Dame DBs? It's Mike Mickens. So you wonder how much that came into play. The way he creates separation downfield isn't the he gets a lot of comps drawn to someone like George Pickens. George Pickens is the guy that knows how to run his body into yours to create that separation, show late hands, come down with the ball. That's not his style. He likes to run into the blind spots of corners, bend routes out, and that's how he creates a separation. And he does it really well. He's got a good gear shift on long developing routes where he's running straight, where he's able to create that separation. And that's why guys get grabby on him, because he has that extra gear to pull away from them. And I think when you really break down how he drew those DPIs, it really comes to show. I see him more because a lot of people are kind of expecting the high point contested catch guy, kind of like the Bolden type guy. I see his route running style, again, between the 20s, not in the red zone, more like a Torrey Smith, and how Torrey Smith won downfield was running into guys' blind spots and bending routes to create that separation downfield. So I know people don't agree with that, and that's fine. Again, that's why the onus is on me to put it on film and show you guys, and that's definitely what I'm going to be doing. But I think Surratt is more of that physical, you know, above the rim guy all over the field. And I just think it's two different approaches to playing the position.
Real quick, Bobby, I think one point, and I don't want to make this out to be like you throw anyone favors, but I think an underrated angle of this draft from a big picture perspective is how much clear coaching involvement there was. And that's always been the case with the Ravens, but you know, you had even a couple of guys, Cleary and Raphael, were talking about today. I mean, you have a lot of the staff is college coaches. They've never been through a draft process from the NFL side, right? I mean, this is a lot. This was new ground. Like, how do we conduct these interviews? Going to pro days as an NFL coach, and a lot of this was all different. And you know, the Ravens front office, Eric DaCosta, Acevedo, all those guys, they could easily big boy the coaches and just says, okay, until you guys get comfortable, like this is our draft and all that stuff. But you could just tell how much input they gave, you know, and you hear different things. You know, Doyle really liked the Alabama tight end, and we know the Michigan connection with Lou Esposito, coach Rashawn Benny at Michigan. We know Jesse Minter knows Hibner from Michigan. We know that Prentice Gill is known. Prentice Gill, assistant wide receiver coach, has known Jacoby Lane since he was a kid. I mean, he kind of recruited him at USC. And Kerry Colbert, their head receiver coach, is a former USC receiver who played in the NFL. So he knows Jacoby Lane. And
he didn't recruit him, but or he didn't coach him, but he would have recruited him, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can go up and down the line. And obviously, I think Ioane was Ledford's favorite player in the draft. So you can go up and down the line and see the connections and see kind of the input. And I think that's important for creating synergy going forward between the front office and coaching staff. That's a big deal for Eric DaCosta here as they sort of navigate a new era of Ravens football with a whole new coaching staff.
And that includes Steve Bisciotti getting his hand-picked selection in the fifth round, which we're going to discuss in the 2.0 version coming up on Thursday.
Look at that transition. What a veteran. Woo!
We made some good timing tonight. We got through four prospects, fellas. We're going to pick things up with a fourth rounder, the aforementioned Matt Hibner, the SMU tight end, and make our way through the second half of the draft in our 2.0 version coming up on Thursday night. If you guys haven't already figured it out by now, we are two a week for the foreseeable future. Same slot time. Tuesdays, Thursdays, 8 o'clock Eastern. Raven Kid 10 gets us on our way here, and he says that he was surprised that they had Lane, meaning the team, and Jacoby Lane, rated higher than Ted Hurst at the wide receiver position. I know Steve Smith was extremely high on Ted Hurst, so to each their own when it comes to wide receiver evaluations, perhaps. But
yeah, I mean, it's all across the board. Like, look, that 49ers guy that they picked with what, the first pick in the second round, he was not expected to go anywhere near there. I think wide receiver, especially, is kind of pick your flavor, whatever you want to do when people are looking for different things and different styles. But I also think the day and age of overdrafting guys on day three or over. I mean, you like a guy, go and get him. Does it really matter if you pick a guy in the fourth round or if you pick him in the seventh? Like a couple of guys, like I thought people reacting to, it just seems like these teams go now in the NFL draft and in day three, and they don't really care about value and where most people have a player. If you want a guy, go get a guy, regardless. Again, does it really matter? I mean, the hit rate on day three picks isn't very high anyway. I think you have to take your shot at guys when you like them. I know Lane was a day two guy, but I think we saw even with the Maryland kid, right? The safety for Maryland was viewed at different parts of the draft as a sixth or seventh round pick, and the Jaguars picked him in the third round. I think this draft more than any led to some variance between who people liked, and I don't think people were crazy about the class as a whole. So it's like, I don't really care. We're drafting him. We like this guy. We're going to get him regardless if we're overdrafting him.
Look forward to diving into it more with you guys on Thursday night. If you could like the video on your way out, we'd appreciate it for continued growth here. Subscribe to the channel as we approach 8,000 subscriptions. Hit that notification bell. You can consider becoming a channel member this offseason or gift-giving membership while you're at it. Appreciate you guys, as always, for popping out here. Thanks to those of you who left Super Chat donations, those of you who showed up. We are also available in the audio-only space as well in the hours that follow these live streams, just in case you can't catch us live. So for Jeff, for Cole, I'm Bobby, signing off from this Tuesday edition of post-draft content here inside the Collective, and we'll catch up with you in about 48 hours from now.